On today's episode of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast, I am joined by Cyclone Fanatic contributor Jay Jordan to break down the first quarter of Iowa State's 2018 football season. So that means we go through the season opener against South Dakota State, the Cy-Hawk game, and the big showdown with Oklahoma at Jack Trice Stadium in week three. This is going to be the first of a four-part podcast series that Jay and I will do. We're going to release part two for our Saturday podcast over the weekend, and then we'll let you know when part three and four are coming a little bit later down the road. Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Heartland Flags. It's summertime. It is the perfect time to get a nice flag out in front of your house, get a new flag for your man cave before the football season. Maybe you need to get a new flag to show off to your buddies when they come over for football on Saturday afternoons in the fall. Heartland Flags is the number one spot to get any flag for any sport, any team. It doesn't matter. They've got everything. Every time I get on their website, I find something new that I want, whether it's Cyclones or the 76ers or the Vikings or whoever. I'm just like, man, I think I could go down a rabbit hole and not emerge for like 2 days just looking at Heartland Flags' website. So they are the presenting sponsor of today's podcast with me and Cyclone Fanatic contributor Jay Jordan. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and here we go. Joined now here on today's Cyclone Fanatic podcast presented by Heartland Flags by Jay Jordan. What's up, my man? It's been a little while.
Hey, Jared, it certainly has been. I hope your summer's going great. Everything's dried out up there, and I'm ready for the fall. How about you?
Yeah, man, I am for sure, dude. It's, for one, I'm tired of it being like 95 degrees with 95% humidity, where you walk outside the door and you're already sweating 2 seconds later.
That's a wonderful feeling.
And secondly, I'm ready for football. And I think the thing we've got to start with here is when the Cyclones roll out here this fall, they're going to be doing it with a new look.
Man, are they. I like it.
Yeah, I know when the, you know, everything that kind of happened last night with the leak, which was, you know, a whole kind of deal. I know you were a little bit skeptical of the look initially. What changed for you? What do you think it's just like seeing the whole situation and seeing the pants and the helmet and everything that kind of changed your mind a little bit?
Yeah, I did not like the initial look. I thought it was a little bit bland, but then when you put the entire ensemble together, listen to me sounding very metro here, when you put the entire ensemble together, I just think it looks sharp.
Yeah.
I probably lean towards the white as my favorite, but I think the ability to mix and match and it's just such a nice clean bodysuit look.
Yeah, that's what I liked. It's simple, it's clean, and at the same time, it's pretty recognizable. So I think that'll be, that's gonna be cool. Those black ones, man, those are smooth as hell. I it's about time that they've got something that looks like that. Those helmets, I would if I had one of those helmets, I would wear it every day, for like 2 years. I think I don't think I'd ever take it off.
Yeah, that'd be great look. I think we should probably go to that and start wearing helmets as headwear, especially to games.
Right.
I love it. I think the blacks are worth at least 7 points when we put them on.
Well, yeah, I saw Adam Gray said that increases his prediction to 11 wins. So, you know, I mean, I replied to him. I was like, man, I don't know why you're capping at 11. I think it's 15-0, but you know, that's just my opinion.
Well, I don't know about that. So we'll jump into our previews here and see how that path could happen. But I think looking good is underrated from the fan perspective and what it does for a kid on the field. And when you look good, you feel good, and you fly around with a little extra pep in your step. And I think they got a chance to do that with these unis.
For sure. So what we're going to do today, you know, you've been writing these speculative previews here for Cyclone Fanatic over the last couple of weeks. And I think you have four that at this point have been posted. And I know you have another one that's in the can ready to go as well. But we're going to run through these first three. And then the next three will be, you know, our Saturday podcast for later on in the week. But obviously it starts out with South Dakota State. And you know, I know the Jackrabbits are a team that, depending on where you look, they can be anywhere from being in the top five in the FCS going into the season to, you know, top 10, top 15. Regardless, they're going to be one of the best FCS teams in the country. And, you know, what's the big thing that, you know, kind of stuck out to you about them when you were watching them and then getting ready to write your preview?
Well, you can't evaluate South Dakota State without looking first at quarterback. They've got a guy who's pulling off the rare four-year starter deal going into this 2018 season. And Taron Christian is a solid quarterback. He's got enough arm strength to get the ball all around the field. Very effective at extending plays with his legs. Had over 500 yards rushing last year. And they run an offense that's very similar to, or I compare it to, West Virginia with their kind of power read option runs. And then they like to get vertical in the seams once they've drawn you up, either through their power running game or with the quarterback runs. But they're all about offense. They score the ball, and if they can't score, they can't win. But they manage to do that 11 to 12 times a year and deep into the FCS playoffs. They're really good at it.
Yeah. And the thing that, oh, sorry. But, you know, the thing you kind of wrote here is if Iowa State can come out and stuff the run, you know, like you're saying, Christian, he's a good quarterback, but he's a guy that, you know, maybe can get a little inaccurate. He can get maybe a little mistake prone when, you know, when you're forcing him into situations where he has to throw the football. If you're Matt Campbell right now, is that the biggest thing you're looking at with the Jackrabbits? You're like, priority number one is we have to stop the run in this game if we're going to win?
Yeah, and I think I wrote that in just a kind of a throwaway sentence towards the end of that first preview is that it's going to be a theme for the season in that stop the run and make the quarterback make throws from the pocket. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a resounding theme for almost every game with the exception of just a couple, and it starts here. If you can keep them from running the ball, so for instance, you and I beat them in the regular season fairly handily last year. They amassed 52 yards rushing in that game. You and I completely took them out of their run game. Christian turned the ball over and struggled to win and move the ball on his own. He threw, I think, six interceptions in their game against James Madison, I think, in the semifinals, because they once again limited him. And once he starts going downhill, he has a tough time pulling himself out of that. So if they can keep Christian in the pocket with some reasonable degree of certainty, and then just bear up, make sure that power running game doesn't get started, then SDSU will have a difficult time scoring and moving the ball against our talent.
For the Iowa State offense, you pegged Deshante Jones, Tariq Milton, Kennedy Nwangwu, Rial Mitchell as some of the guys that are going to kind of be the X factors in this game. You know, what is it about all of them? I mean, obviously, you know, when you just look at them, there's some characteristics that are pretty similar that I think that anybody who has watched Iowa State or watched any of those guys can kind of peg out. But what is it about them that you think is going to make them so important in this season opener?
Speed.
Yeah.
I mean, just quite simply, we're a faster team this year than we've been in the past. And those are the players where that speed comes from. And it's not to say other guys aren't fast. They are. But those are our speed and movement guys. And the reason I think they'll be very important in this game is if the one thing South Dakota State struggles with is defense. Mm-hmm. they just don't play very good defense. And if they're looking at stopping Iowa State or the first person you look at is David Montgomery, I think they'll have to blitz and bring pressure packages. And if they're doing that, then you're going to have hot receivers in the slot. So that means you're going to get the ball out quick to a Milton, to a Deshante Jones in the slot. You're going to run those horizontal plays that we see Iowa State do very often to try to limit and slow down the blitz. The ball gets in those guys' hands, then This is a great opportunity to see what they can do and how dangerous they are. But they'll be key in my mind, just because they're a mismatch with their speed, and the ball should be coming their way based on the way I think South Dakota State will play against us.
How do you think? I mean, do you think that it's going to be good? This is the kind of game for a guy like Kyle Kemp that will be good for him to kind of ease back into the season. I mean, having, you know, for him last year, even when he stepped on the field against Oklahoma, and I think even, you know, towards the end of the season, like, there was no expectations for him, you know, as much as anything. Everybody's like, you know, we're gambling with house money to an extent. You're on kind of, you know, you're just, yeah, like I said, you're kind of gambling with house money at that point with everything that he was able to do. Do you think that this team, you know, this gives them a good opportunity to kind of ease him back into things, you know, as the season's getting going?
It does. I just don't have a high degree of anxiety about Kemp's ability to ease into a game or a season. Mm-hmm. I think what we saw from him is just a calm and collected and very confident player. So I feel like this game will certainly get him in a position where he can make nice, easy, comfortable throws, get into some rhythm, get some confidence moving forward, both short and long. It's a good game for him to slide into. It's a very good game for the offensive line to slide into and to start to see what we have there, if it's a step better than what it was last year. They really need to be two to three steps better than last year. And for them to establish themselves in the running game, which was something we weren't really able to do last year against UNI.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, just based on the talent that they've got coming back on that offensive line, and I know we've talked about this a lot previously, but I mean, I feel like it's hard for them going to be hard for them to not be better, you know, just being in another year in the program, guys getting a year older, and the number of guys that they've got coming back who have played a ton of snaps already at the college level, that's just something that Iowa State hasn't had in a long time. So I agree with you. I think this is going to be an important game for that offensive line to come out and, as much as anything, maybe just like set a tone, you know, come out and be like, you know what, we know that we've been below average, we know that our coach has ripped us, we know that the fans don't have that much confidence in us or whatever, but we feel like we are considerably better, and we know that we are better than this team on the other side of us. We're going to come out and prove it to them, and we're going to own them from beginning to finish.
Well, not only I think you're exactly right, but they have to.
Yeah,
they have to, and we're about to step into games 2 and 3. But this season, more than any other that I've seen, and certainly the first two campaigns for Matt Campbell, they better be ready, and they better go set the tone against South Dakota State. Don't mess around. Get the job done and do it early, because you're going to have to strap it up next week.
All right, so let's move on to that next game that you just mentioned. Obviously, that's against the Iowa Hawkeyes in Iowa City. I know this is one that you've thought about a lot. You've come in our group chat, and you'll always just have a, you know, a little tidbit or something that you're thinking about with Iowa. I mean, what do you see being the most crucial piece of this? I mean, obviously, always the battle in the trenches is going to be the one that you're really looking at heavily going against the Hawkeyes. But am I wrong if I feel like that the Iowa State defensive line versus the Iowa offensive line is closer to being a wash than it's been in, I mean, I don't even know how many years, at least since I've been covering the team. I can't, and you would be able to put that in perspective better than what I can.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a wash. And I mean, you got to think back a number of years to find a wash in that matchup. But I think Iowa State's defensive line is solid enough to contend with every offensive line on their schedule, mm-hmm. Even Iowa's. Iowa's got some guys who are developing, some true freshmen that played last year who will be back. They lose some key pieces and good players, but again, it's Iowa and the offensive line. So they'll be solid. If they're not, then this matchup tilts towards Iowa State significantly, because Iowa State's defensive line is good enough to contain and control Iowa's offense if they're allowed to get a push.
I mean, obviously the thing last year that, I mean, really was kind of the difference in the game was a guy named Akram Wadley, and he's gone now. So, you know, with the just the entire matchup of the Iowa offense versus the Iowa State defense, do you feel like that's one that maybe is going to swing Iowa State's way a little bit more than it did last year? Or do you think that, you know, some of these pieces that the Hawkeyes have coming back, you know, and Nate Stanley and some of those receivers, do you think that it's going to be, you know, kind of a shootout like it was last year?
I don't think it's going to be the shootout it was last year. Number one, Iowa State found their footing defensively after the Iowa mm-hmm. game. Some of the things that they were doing during the Iowa game led to Wadley and Fant's ability to get open and run with the ball after the catch. I think Stanley's going to be much better. I like Fant. I'm less worried about who the player is catching the ball than I am about the tendency of Iowa to use delayed routes, which are very effective against Iowa State's preferred defense. But I think you're going to see a little bit more man under and four man fronts against Iowa, which will help limit that and put them on par. But I don't think it's going to be quite the shootout it was before. I really feel in this game, just thinking about it even more since writing the article, that if Iowa wins this game, it's going to be a close one. Mm-hmm. It's going to be just like last year, very similar. It's going to be a little bit back and forth, a slugfest, maybe a little bit higher scoring, but probably right there around the 30-point mark. If Iowa State wins the game, they could win a slugfest, but I feel like there's a chance that Iowa State has a better ability to put distance on the scoreboard between them and Iowa than Iowa does against Iowa State, is the way I feel.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. And I would, I wouldn't mind that happening.
No,
certainly.
Me either. The thing about that I get when I watch Iowa, man, I watch a lot of their film because they were interesting to me in the way they struggled in their points of inconsistency is, and it kind of hit me that Iowa is a forward lean team. And what I mean by that is when they play defense, they play fundamentally sound, positionally disciplined defense, but when they play at their best, they're playing forward, meaning you can't run the ball against them because they're filling the gaps and they're filling it from all levels. And it makes them vulnerable to passes over the top. But when they're playing at their best and their hardest to beat, they're leaning forward. Same on their offense. They're a forward lean team, and if they're playing their best, they're hitting vertical seam routes and they're running the ball with their patented stretch play, and they're leaning forward. But when you get them to where they're on their heels, if you can hit them over the top, if you can hit them with some things horizontally where you spread them out and put them on their heels, and offensively you clog them up in the middle and push them to the perimeter, then they struggle, and they struggle mightily with that. That's the game for Iowa State, is how do they schematically and execution put Iowa on its heels defensively and offensively, spread them from the middle out. And if they can do that with any consistency, they can distance themselves from them.
For the Iowa State offense going against the Iowa defense, I mean, obviously they lost some pretty important pieces, especially in the linebacking core, the defensive backfield. I mean, how do you see that shaping up? Is this something where, you know, Iowa State can have an advantage with guys like Hakeem Butler again? You know, he obviously had the huge game against Iowa last season, or could we even see, you know, something where maybe David Montgomery comes out and has a big game? Like, where do you think Iowa State can have that biggest advantage in this one?
I see it with the, I mean, it's a brand new linebacking core. Mm-hmm. And there's, they'll be decent because it's Iowa. They always put out decent linebacking cores and they play okay. But they've got a matchup issue with Butler, with Chase Allen, with Dylan Sainer, even with a guy like Eaton working across the middle. Last year we saw him bend the skinny post and work down the seams to Murdoch and Butler, most notably, when he made the double move and went over the top late in the game. Those same type of areas are weaknesses in their scheme that they have a tendency to jump from the safety level. They either stay back too far or they jump it up, and it gives you an opportunity to work short and long in there. And if their linebackers are not adept at covering and closing space, then that's going to be open all day. And then we've got a couple beasts there to throw the ball to. And you don't have to be terribly accurate with the catch radius that Butler and Allen have. So that's where I think they get loosened up. And then if they're loosened up enough and the offensive line is on point or beginning to gel, then I don't know about how you feel about Montgomery, but I just think the guy's special. Is probably
I love him.
Underwhelming term.
Yeah.
So I think if that guy starts to get loose, he has the ability to control games.
Right.
And if there's something that you do in the passing game that loosens him up against Iowa, which I think is the way it needs to happen, instead of him loosening the passing game up, I think the passing game needs to loosen up things for David against Iowa. And if that guy gets rolling downhill, then it's going to be a long day for a lot of opponents in 2018.
David Montgomery isn't quite at George Niang levels of making me question my sexuality, but he's getting pretty damn close. I'll just say that. That's how much I love him.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a significant man crush myself on the man.
All right, so you put in here Greg Eisworth and Willie Harvey. I know you're a big Greg Eisworth guy. You put those as your two X factors, and you know, that's largely due to the tight ends that that Iowa's able to roll out there. Are you – I mean, I know Noah Fant's a guy that is basically a consensus preseason first-team All-American. Do you think that's going to be a tough matchup for Iowa State, or do you think that's something that those guys can handle pretty well?
It's going to be a tough matchup for everybody on Iowa's schedule.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy's coverable. At the collegiate level, his skill level is off the charts in my estimation. I think I wrote in the article that they ought to target him at least 10 times in every ball game, and certainly against Iowa State. I think Harvey, and I don't know about Eisworth yet. I'm just projecting because he hasn't played at that level just yet. But I think they have a chance. To be able to stay with him effectively. I probably should have put a note in there that the best defense against him is getting to Stanley, who mm-hmm. is not mobile. And, you know, our key guy in that is Jaquan Bailey.
Right.
If Bailey can bring some pressure, or we find a way to bring some pressure, then that gives means you don't have to cover Fant for quite as long. But if those guys can just hold their own, or even just a little bit below, hold their own against Fant, then that gives Iowa State their best opportunity to be successful defensively. It's just hard to do. Right. Guy's a great player. Just a great player.
Man, I don't know what you think, but I feel like this game could be like the kind of coming out party for this Iowa State defense. Like, or not the defense, the defensive line particularly. I mean, I know that, you know, people here and you and like people that really pay attention to what Iowa State's doing, they all know that Iowa State's going to be good on the defensive line. They've got a lot of talent there. But I think if they can come out and play really well against that Iowa offensive line that has been traditionally so good and is so well respected across the country, that's the kind of thing that I think can make people take notice. If they're able to get to Nate Stanley quite a bit and really make him feel uncomfortable, that I think that that's the kind of game where, you know, people across the country are going to look at that and be like, man, like Iowa State's defense line is pretty salty, which is something that we've known here for, you know, almost a year, I guess, now.
Yes, and, you know, obviously that all starts with Ray Lima.
Yeah.
And his outstanding play in the middle. And I don't see the matchup with him going any way other than in Lima's favor. The question will be, what type of steps forward do the other guys make?
Mm-hmm.
Is Bailey what we all think Bailey can be? He's kind of a maddening player to watch from week to week and even from play to play at times. If he's a little bit more dialed in and, you know, in his third year should have the body type and the power that we want to see, he's disruptive. And then I can't pronounce his last name, so I just call him Inye.
Uwazurike.
Uwazurike, there
yeah,
you go.
Yep.
So it's hard for us guys who live in Texas that are formerly from Iowa. Uwazurike is got the potential to be, if you run a four-man front, however they choose to do it, you have Lima, who is your stopgap, two-gap type player.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a double team, maybe even a double team and a chip to keep him from going wherever he wants to go. And then you can put a guy next to him that has disruptive pass rush ability from the inside, which I think is what Inye has.
I think Tongamoa has that too.
Well, and I just haven't seen enough of him.
Yeah,
play.
For sure.
I've just kind of got him in my back pocket, like, you know, let's see where this goes. Mm-hmm. With him. But Inye, I feel like I've got enough of a catalog of what his skills are to
for
think
sure.
that he has some penetration ability. I tell you who else does is Jamal Johnson.
Yeah.
There were times in the TCU game in particular where Johnson destroyed some people pass rushing up the middle, collapsing the pocket. And I think so there's four guys that you can rotate in with fresh legs right in the heart of the defense with a potential beast on the outside and some really great effort players on the other end. That's hard to deal with, and it's going to be hard to block if those guys have taken the developmental step that we expect them to do and that we expect from a Eli Rashid-coached defensive line, then you're exactly right. Teams are going to say, last year might not have been a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are even better.
Man, this is kind of a side note, but you and I got to have a conversation here real quick. I don't know if you heard, but they announced yesterday Ray Lima is going to be in Dallas for the Big 12 Media Days. And, Jay, I know how much you love Ray Lima, but you can't crash Big 12 Media Days, okay?
I am.
Oh, yeah.
How did you know? I wasn't even going to tell Chris. I'm just going to show up over there, and I'm going to have a handmade Ray Lima jersey on. And a hat that says Lemanatic.
There you go. Yeah, I saw that yesterday. I was like, oh, Jay's going to be so excited to see that Ray's going to be there.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player and didn't get all the – he got recognition last year, but probably not all that he deserved because what he did was so underrated and doesn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, however cliche that is. But that's often the case with a two-gap nose like he played last year.
Yeah.
I think this year's going to be interesting with the infusion of the four-man front to see what he does if he gets some one-gap responsibility.
Yeah, those guys that play that position, I mean, the ones that are, like, there's so many that are good, but the ones that are, that you, like, you can name on, you know, one hand, like, the dudes who are just, you know, difference makers that, like, really change a game or, like, are guys who just are out, like, making a huge impact, especially, like, on the stat sheet. I mean, you think about guys like, you know, Ndamukong Suh and like some of the dudes that Alabama's had in the past. Like when you get a guy at that defensive tackle spot that is really disruptive, then your defense goes to a completely different level. But even if they're not, you know, they're more often than not, that's a position where the guy's kind of like seen and not heard in a way.
Well, absolutely. Because what that guy's doing is not only does that, he creates one-on-one matchups for the outside and other defensive linemen, but more than anything, he frees up the middle linebacker right. to be the playmaker. And, you know, without solid defense, you know, just using the opponent we were just talking about, Josie Jewell is a fantastic football player. But he was made better by the soundness of the two defensive tackles sitting in front of him. Mm-hmm. And he got to run and make plays. Joel last year got to develop and turn into a comfortable playmaking middle linebacker because Ray kept him clean. And those two, when you're good at that position, you make multiple other positions on the defense better. Yeah. And make their jobs easier, and that's why he's so important.
Yeah, there's been a lot of times where, in the years previous to that, where you were seeing that defensive line, you know, by the time the ball was snapped, they're already pushed back 2 yards, and you know, it's like a clap of the hands. But I think that those days are long behind us. All right, moving on to the last game that we're going to cover here on this podcast, and I think it's one that might have people the most excited of the bunch, and it's probably the most exciting home game that Iowa State's going to have this year, and that's against Oklahoma, obviously coming off the win against the Sooners last year. Can they do it again, man? Can Iowa State start their first winning streak against Oklahoma since I have no idea if they've ever won two in a row against Oklahoma.
I don't either. If they did, it predates both of us.
Yeah.
So, man, hard question. So, here's my thoughts. Oklahoma's good enough to do exactly what they did last year, which mm-hmm. is make a run to the playoff game. They did that, even though they got beat by Iowa State. As I looked at the game last year, and I've watched it many times, as many have, and I'm certainly not the absolute authority on it, but the general consensus of, you know, outside observers is Iowa State caught them on a bad day. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like that was the case. That game was far more competitive. Iowa State had the chance to roll over. They didn't, and Oklahoma had a hard time adjusting once kind of their defensive clamps started to come in. They're going to be really strong in the backfield. Their wide receiving core is dangerous as always, so there's not going to be anything new. What's going to be new is their quarterback. So what does Murray do?
Yeah.
Do they have to have Murray to win? Or have Murray be good or be Baker Mayfield-esque to win? No, not at all. They can win in multiple ways. But it's going to be about Murray, and it's going to be about whether or not their defense takes a step forward. Their defense was not as good as Iowa State's. Their defense was great against Ohio State last year and not even close to as good as they were against Ohio State the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those kids are back. Some of them are maturing. They were very young last year. They switched from a 3-4 to a 4-3, so that could have been part of it. But whereas we used to identify Oklahoma with strong defense, we don't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not really the way they went. They may have to this year, but the third game of the year is an interesting time to catch them.
Right. I was just
going to say, if Iowa State is going to extend a streak, and the reason they have a shot in this game is because of when we catch them.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that was going to be my next question. But if Iowa State can win, it will even their longest win streak in the Oklahoma and Iowa State series. Their longest win streak is currently two in 1960 and 1961. So
nice.
There you go. That's the answer to that trivia question for you for today. But yeah, that was going to be my next question. I mean, I think, and it, the Kyler Murray situation is interesting to me because, I mean, obviously he has played baseball throughout the entire spring. He just got drafted by the Oakland A's and is probably only going to play one more year of college football, and then he's going to go play for the A's. Are Would you be shocked if he wasn't even Oklahoma's starting quarterback at the end of the year? I mean, that's just an idea in my head, but would you be?
Not at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Not at all. The commitment and the mentality, the short-timer mentality is there or is a possibility. I think the kid's a super competitor.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that will be the case, and it's probably given him not enough credit by even raising that issue. The bigger question I have with him is just the ability to read and react appropriately if things are difficult. He played in his high school, won a bunch of state championships. Things weren't real difficult for him. Baseball is not a real difficult sport for him. He's very good at it. When he played at A&M as a true freshman, things were hard. He didn't always hold up well mentally or make great decisions when things got hard.
Yeah.
He's playing at Oklahoma, where things aren't going to be that hard all the time against the opponents that they play, because they overmatch many of their teams.
Right.
The one thing about Iowa State is it's hard to play against us. It's hard to play against Iowa State's defensive scheme, and if they run a multiple scheme that we hear the coaching staff talk about all the time as one of the keys to the season, if we run a multiple scheme where we switch between max coverage, bring pressure, run contain type schemes that frustrate what they're trying to do with him, then how does he react?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have any basis to know. And by the third game, they may not know yet. And that's where the glitch in the system and in the system that is the Oklahoma juggernaut comes, and what gives makes Iowa State a very difficult game for them in the third game of the year.
Who do they open up with? I know they play UCLA at some point. I think that's the week before they play Iowa State.
UCLA, I think, is their opener.
Oh, okay.
And I think they've got a patsy before they come into Iowa State.
Okay.
But I'd have to double check that.
I was going to say, it would be kind of interesting if they had to go against UCLA in that Chip Kelly offense the week before they played Iowa State, but I guess if that's going to be 2 weeks before.
Even being 2 weeks before, it's a nice test for them. Who knows how they stand up to it? It's not like UCLA's coming off a...
Yeah.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're going to have a retooling year.
Right.
But UCLA, from a pure talent standpoint, is Oklahoma's equal or just, a quarter step below them. They have a lot of very talented kids and now a talented offensive mind at the head coach position as well. So that will be probably a more intriguing game than some expect. And it'll be interesting. It'll be nice film for Iowa State to use for preparation.
Definitely. All right, man. That should wrap everything up for those first three games, but we'll talk to you again on the Saturday podcast, all right?
Sounds great.
Cool. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation, breaking down the first quarter of the Iowa State football season between myself and Cyclone Fanatic contributor Jay Jordan. Like I said at the beginning, we are going to release part two of this podcast, breaking down the games against Akron, TCU, and Oklahoma State. For our Saturday podcast over the weekend, so make sure and keep an eye out for that. Jay, as always, has plenty of good insight on the Cyclones and going into this 2018 football season. I always love being able to do these podcasts with him. We'll let you know whenever we're going to do 3 and 4. Just got to figure out how the schedules line up and everything with me and Jay. And I know he's going to be busy next week going down to the Big 12 Media Day. Thanks again to Heartland Flags for being the presenting sponsor of today's podcast. They are one of our longest running sponsors here at CycloneFanatic.com. And like I said, in the intro, every time I get on their website, I feel like I find 100 new things that I need. I mean, probably don't really need, but that I really, really want to make it feel like I need them. So Heartland Flags, presenting sponsor of today's podcast, HeartlandFlags.com. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Peace.